Mini episode 1017 of the FBH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FBH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 1017. FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris with you here today, as well as a good friend of ours. We have talked college football with him a lot over the years, XFL, most recently, actually, in our previous segment. If you're listening to these sequentially, and why wouldn't you be, just talked about the Urban Meyer scandal and suspension with him. Good friend Fran Stuckberry, college football writer for Our Sports Central and a number of other fine outlets, a gentleman who has been covering the world of football at all levels for the better part of about two decades now. Few, if any, people I know watch more football at all levels than this guy. Always a pleasure to have him on. We're breaking down the 2018 college football season today. Fran, great to have you back on, my man. I'm looking forward to this.
Rick, I'm very happy to be on the show as always.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to have you in. And again, as we get into this, we covered the Urban Meyer thing, like I said, previous segments, so we don't have to really get into that here. Big picture, looking at the season, I know there are some things coming into the year. Coaching changes, the one that just boggles everybody's mind is walking away from Florida State, but hey, the big money of Texas A&M, an inferior situation, quite frankly, for being a contender when you look at the brutal, unforgiving landscape of the SEC West. But Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, we've seen a number of interesting things shaking out over the course of this offseason. And again, Willie Taggart going down to Florida State from Oregon. So it's always a dominoes game when top jobs are open. But what are your thoughts about some of the key things that happened in the offseason that are going to shape the 2018 college football season?
Well, with some of the hires, I think Scott Frost, I mean, it's actually going to make Nebraska a contender for the Big Ten. I mean, Jimbo Fisher, the SEC is just too brutal. I mean, Bronkowski, they're playing those tough teams every year. Chip Kelly, I think, you give him a year or two. I think UCLA can be a fun team to watch.
They really could be. And you mentioned Scott Frost going to Nebraska, which to me is an absolutely inspired hire. That is just amazing on all levels. You've got the local hero that everybody loves, a guy who in his young career has shown that he's a turnaround expert. And I'll tell you what, for two programs that have never had anything even remotely approaching a rivalry, am I right in suspecting that within about two or three years, one of the hotter college football rivalries we could be looking at might be Wisconsin and Nebraska?
I think you're right, Rick. I mean, I think Scott Frost is going to turn that place around. I think that high-powered, exciting offense. It's not just going to be a typical Nebraska smash football that they used to in the early days. It'll be fun to watch. I think he's going to turn around and he's going to get them, you know, eventually to the Big Ten championship game, and maybe a playoff down the road. We'll see.
Yeah, he's a heck of a coach, and again, a great hire on their part. Everybody kind of saw it coming, and again, it shook out that way. It was just an amazing hire for them. It's not going to be an immediate turnaround because even though the Big Ten West is a lot easier than the Big Ten East, you still got to get from here to there. It's harder to turn it around at a higher level. But boy, if I was the rest of the coaches in the Western Division, I would be thinking Shiznit just got real because Nebraska is going to be back and back in a relative hurry, I would say. As we look at the landscape of college football, of course, we tend to spend the better part of our time when we're doing these on the major conferences. Let's start in your neck of the woods, the ACC. You've got the Coastal Division where Miami still looks to be the class of the bunch. You've got Virginia Tech lingering around somewhere in there. North Carolina, it's a big year for Larry Fedora. He better get it done sooner rather than later. A Coastal Division that doesn't seem to have a whole lot of depth to it. An Atlantic Division that has some interesting teams, obviously. You start with Clemson, the year-in and year-out presumptive champion, and they are again. Florida State, what are they going to look like in the first year of Willie Taggart being there? A Syracuse team that I kind of like as a little bit of a sleeper. North Carolina State, you have been pointing out a lot on Facebook about how their program's really kind of gotten it going. Louisville, who, again, I've got for fifth in the division at this point. It could be a very, very interesting year. They got that tough game early on, obviously, with Alabama, albeit at home, which is an interesting scheduling fluke. So as you're looking at the landscape of the ACC this year, what are you seeing, Fran?
I think you'll have Clemson and Miami in the ACC championship, with Clemson advancing and getting to the playoffs. As far as the teams in my area, if North Carolina will open those play again, spend all distractions, if they don't get to a bowl game this year, I think Larry Fedora is going to be fired. With NC State, you have Ryan Finley, who could be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft. Their game against West Virginia on December 15th with Will Brandon, that's going to be the first team in the 50s that will win that game. And with Duke in my area, if who would want a job? Dave Comfort goes 6-6 and you make a bowl game, you're a legend down there.
That is really amazing what the standard is for that program. There's no question about that, and that they really don't seem to set their sights very high. I agree with you on Clemson v. Miami. By the way, anybody looking for the official FDH Lounge predictions on these things, Fantasy Football Draftology 2018, and specifically I'm looking at page 9 right now. So all of the picks by conference. We have a college fantasy football game in here where you draft teams and you go by how they do in terms of wins, and there's points for that. That ranking system and our top 41 overall, that was our cutoff point. That's on page 8, as well as the guidelines for the game. And on the back page, also the top 50 college football games of this season as we had them ranked. So a little bit more fun this year than usual in putting together the guide, diving deep into college football. And again, being on here with a guy like you, Fran, again, you obviously, again, you're following it even closer. Nobody I know follows it closer than you do, but I feel a little bit more armed for having a conversation with you, which is a good thing. And as we stay in your corner of the country, the Southeastern Conference, this is too consequential not to do it by division, because you look at it there's so much to say about each of them. Kirby Smith and Georgia, for whatever period of time it takes for Tennessee and or Florida to get back on their feet, Georgia's going to be the presumptive SEC East champ coming in, I think. Their recruiting has just been unbelievable. And again, they are most people's estimation as the top team in the SEC East this year. Florida and Tennessee, with Dan Mullen at Florida and the situation at Tennessee there, where you have another, much like Kirby Smart, you have another disciple of Nick Saban's coming in there and really trying to affect a turnaround and using the power of recruiting with Jeremy Pruitt. So that is an interesting situation at Missouri. I know you're going to get into this a little bit. Another one of these top quarterbacks of the country and a potential Heisman Trophy candidate there. South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt look like they're kind of fighting for the scraps in the division there. Each of them hoping maybe just to get a bowl berth. But again, you've got Georgia, and then that next mix with Florida, Missouri, Tennessee. The 2-3-4, as I have them at the moment, to me that's the most interesting part of the SEC East, is seeing how they jockey for position.
I mean, it's definitely very interesting conference. Georgia, hands down, is a front runner in that conference. I mean, some people consider South Carolina as a sleeper team. Louisville is actually shocked they weren't ranked in the top 25 after the 9-4 season they had last year.
Yeah, I think people could be in for an eyebrow raiser in terms of the expectations with that one. And you look at the West, and much like as we say, Georgia's the presumptive favorite in the East, I think you still give it to Alabama. It's close, because to me Auburn's not far behind, but with what Alabama has coming back and what they're bringing in, which you could cut and paste that every year with what to say with what they're returning and with what the recruiting is, they're up there. So to me, they're just narrowly ahead of Auburn. But again, that next tier to me is extraordinarily interesting. You got Mississippi State. You got Ed Orgeron at LSU in what is a make or break year for him, I think, because it's just a question of how bad of a season will get him fired. Would 8-4 get him fired? Possibly. 7-5 would. 9-3 maybe 10-2, he probably comes back another year. But Ed Orgeron has a certain target he's got to hit this year. Jimbo Fisher, we talked about this. I got Texas A&M slotted for fifth place in the West this year. Expectations are going to be, I think, ahead of production this year in the SEC West for A&M. You got Arkansas, and then I think Mississippi bringing up the rear in the West. In college football, it's arguably the toughest division in any conference, Fran.
It definitely is. And as far as LSU is concerned, if they turn for some reason to be Miami to week one, that would really be a job-saving victory for Ed Orgeron. Because the thing is, every year they have they keep on changing the offensive coordinator. They've had so many – they can't find a quarterback down there. I mean, they do a good job recruiting, yet they cannot find a quarterback down in LSU. But I think Alabama is the elite. I mean, now they have a quarterback in Tua, looking portable and deep, and they can have a high-power offense, which is not typical Alabama teams.
It is a really interesting thing that Alabama hasn't had that element. FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway pointed that out to me a long time ago. You notice that Alabama's never really had great quarterback play in the Nick Saban era, as dominant as they've been. And I said to him, I said, well, maybe Nick Saban isn't prioritizing that. Maybe he's prioritizing other areas, because that's the first thought that you have, is that anything Nick Saban is not doing must be according to some kind of a plan, because he is the most successful coach of his era, and one could argue, arguably, of all time. And then Chris very sensibly pointed out to me, well, why wouldn't Nick Saban want five-star quarterback play? So that's one of those interesting questions. Chris raised it because, obviously, again, he's a very sharp guy. But I don't know if you have any theories as to why we haven't seen it, Fran. To me, it's a head-scratcher, and that if Tua can come in there and give them that elite play, that would be a standout in the Nick Saban era, something we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would. I think Lane Kiffin was, as the offensive coordinator before he went to Florida Atlantic, really helped give them a better offense. I mean, I think the offense started to get a little more up pace and spread, and it wasn't just the boring smash mouth football we're used to.
Absolutely, yeah. They have modernized, and they have come into the 2000s, so to speak, here, and that just makes them more and more dangerous. We go to the Big Ten East, and we covered two of the programs that are considered to be on that, I would think most people would say, the top tier of college football. Alabama, Clemson, and then I think at this point, Urban Meyer, because of the head coach. And we covered a lot of the moral failings of Urban Meyer in our last segment that we did here, but sticking to on the field, if the SEC West isn't the toughest division in college football, and I think it is by a hair, the Big Ten East has got to be right behind them. You've got Ohio State, you've got Michigan, in what looms as a must year for Jim Harbaugh. Now, again, this is a thing where, because people keep asking me, I mean, does he have to beat Ohio State to keep his job this year? Does he have to do this, have to do that? I think all he has to do is avoid like a 7-5 catastrophe. Because, again, for Michigan, he's the guy they pined over for that long. He's the guy they wanted so desperately. If Jim Harbaugh fails at Michigan, and they have to admit that, where do they go from here? It's an interesting thing. So I don't think Harbaugh necessarily has to beat Ohio State to keep his job this year. But if he's going to lose to Ohio State, he damn well better beat Michigan State, which has given him a lot more problems than anybody thought that they would. Penn State, those four teams right there, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, and Michigan State, those are the ones that, again, that four is better than any four from any division that is out there right now. Penn State with Trace McSorley, certainly a Heisman Trophy candidate. It's a big drop-off from there. You've got a Maryland program that's in a lot of flux because of their own moral failings as far as how they run things here and literally run players to death, unfortunately. Rutgers and Indiana, bringing up the rear in most people's expectations in the Big Ten East. Indiana potentially building something for the long term, but that's generally the best you can ever say of them. The Big Ten East, extraordinarily top-heavy with those four teams, and every one of the round-robin games between those four teams this year, Fran, is going to be must-watch football.
It definitely will be, but one thing about Michigan, Jim Harbaugh, they finally found a quarterback almost transfer Shea Patterson. I mean, they finally have a guy that's a little mobile, that can throw the ball. That's the big thing. They finally have a quarterback, they may actually win some of the games people expect them to lose. When it comes down to it, Rick, I think it's going to come down to Ohio State and Penn State, and my pick is Penn State since they're playing them at home.
Yeah, that could very much matter. And again, in looking a lot of the FDH Lounge best games of the 2018 college football season, our top 50 games, so many of them are dominated by teams from the Big Ten East. Number four, you've got Michigan at Ohio State. Number five, Michigan at Notre Dame. Number six, Ohio State at Penn State. Number seven, Michigan at Michigan State. Number eight, Wisconsin at Penn State. Number 10, Ohio State at Michigan State. Number 14, Penn State at Michigan. You see the pattern here, folks, that again, so many of these games between these teams are so consequential. And of course, the one team that I just mentioned from the Big Ten West that is a part of that, Wisconsin, they, of course, don't have that many games that are going to be that tough for them in division. They'll have a few. You've got Iowa, which, again, they've shown capabilities the last couple of years and a little bit higher ceiling than most of what we've seen in the Kirk Ferentz era. So Iowa at least will keep Wisconsin on their toes. You've got Nebraska in the mix. I think in year one of Scott Frost, to me, they're already going to be the number three team in that division, and I think that's basically their floor going forward. You've got from there Northwestern, PJ Fleck at Minnesota. I've got them as the number five team in the division right now. He's going to be getting to a point here where, again, he's been on sort of an uninterrupted upward career trajectory. Minnesota is one of the most interesting schools in the country when you look at both college football and college basketball, because it's like a mirror image having Richard Pitino there, because both programs, you get the sense that they are harvesting coaches for bigger jobs yet to come. But P.J. Fleck, in a year of opportunity in the Big Ten West, before Nebraska really becomes something under Scott Frost, this is going to be interesting. P.J. Fleck is going to have them make a move. Jeff Brohm at Purdue, I've got them in the sixth spot. I know he is somebody that you have an appreciation for, Fran. I do as well. We'll see what the ceiling is for the Purdue program and what's the most he can get out of them before moving on to another job. Number seven, Illinois. They have really, really, really seen some down times in recent years. I don't see this year being any different. So we've used this term a lot of times for a lot of the divisions here. Presumptive division favorite, to me, it's Wisconsin in the Big Ten West.
I think it's definitely Wisconsin. I mean, they have one of the best running backs. That's like a running back university, all the running backs they've had, but
they are amazing, the way that they continue to churn those guys out. And again, Wisconsin is a program that is going to be a legit threat in the Big Ten championship game. A lot of times, not so much. A lot of times, it's sort of been a cannon fodder kind of a thing for the Big Ten East champion. And whoever comes out of the Big Ten East, they're going to have, no doubt about it, no semblance of a glass jaw. They're going to have an ability to take a punch. And that's something that is going to be questioned about Wisconsin a little bit because of their schedule. But they're about as good as anybody at this point. We get to the Pac-10, and again, the North Division, you look at it, I don't think we really have a presumptive division favorite, but I'm going to install Washington as the favorite. I've got them by a little bit over Stanford. It's a transitional year for Oregon as they continue to try to get back to where they were from there. Cal, Washington State, Oregon State. The bottom kind of falls out in a hurry. You start getting to the bottom of the conference here. But Washington, Stanford, and to whatever extent Oregon are going to make this battle for the division crown kind of interesting, I would think, Fran.
Yeah. I think you give it to Washington, but the thing is, Stanford with Bryce Love, if he has mega games, and he's also another Heisman Trophy candidate. But I think he just goes to Washington. I would think the rest of the teams, Stanford just doesn't have they don't have the defense like they did the years ago. They just don't. I mean, years ago they were getting the Rose Bowls and doing this, and now they're just skating by.
They are, and that division, again, it doesn't have a whole lot of depth to it. The other one, the Pac-10 South, it really is interesting because it is probably one of the bigger grab bag divisions in college football right now, to where it could be one of a number of teams emerging in this division. It's very possibly the most wide open. I've got USC 1, Arizona 2. From there, you've got Colorado and Utah. You could make a case for either one of those teams. I think year one of Herm Edwards at Arizona State, you'd be asking an awful lot, and you'd be asking way too much of Chip Kelly at UCLA. And I think everybody in Westwood knows this is going to take a year or two for him to get his system in place, his players in place. The lingering question when you look at how things went for him towards the end in the NFL is that, again, there's no question about it that Chip Kelly is going to go down as a great innovator, but his system and aspects of it are being run by so many different teams at the college football and the NFL level. He may be a victim of his own success in terms of now not doing things that much differently than anybody else, which was the things that set him apart when he was at Oregon in the early part of the time with the Eagles. So what's your thoughts about the Pac-10 South, Fred?
Well, I mean, the team to keep an eye on is Arizona, because that's another coach now. Kevin Sumlin, who came from Texas A&M. That's a very interesting hire. I mean, I think that's a great hire for Arizona, much better than Rich Rodriguez over there. But, I mean, UCLA, it's going to take time. Some people have, Utah is a possibility. It's pretty much wide open. Everyone wants USC, but, we'll have to see if they can just continue to build on the momentum.
That will be the big question, certainly. You go to the Big 12, and again, as far as the team everybody is looking at, in year two of the new coaching there, Oklahoma, to me, I think remains at the top of the conference. In the second spot there, the team they will pick in the Big 12 championship game, I'm going out on a limb because I have said in years past, one of the biggest head-scratching teams in the country from week to week in terms of how good or how bad they might look as West Virginia. I think this might be the year that they break through enough to at least make the conference championship game. To me, it's kind of now or never for them as far as the opportunities in the conference. From there, you've got TCU, that tough early season game with Ohio State. That is going to be a thing that they're going to have to overcome somehow. At Texas, it is only a matter of time before Tom Herman really gets them going. So again, if you're a program like West Virginia, you strike while the iron's hot, because if it's not Texas's time yet, we're probably only about a year or so away from that. Oklahoma State, a perennial threat. They're always at least on the periphery of the top of the conference. From there, Iowa State, Matt Campbell has gotten to be a hot commodity for a bigger coaching job, and that could be coming after this season. Kansas State is a solid program, certainly at this point. You go from there, Texas Tech, the turnaround attempt at Baylor is ongoing, and the turnaround at Kansas seemingly stalled as per always. So the Big 12, the only one of the conferences that is not split into divisions, everybody plays everybody, and again, somebody's going to play somebody else twice in the conference championship game, as is the case now that they're doing it that way. To me, it's Oklahoma over West Virginia. How do you see it, Fran?
Yeah, Rick, I agree. I think it is Oklahoma. Oklahoma, despite losing Baker Mayfield, they'll still be a solid team. West Virginia, I will agree. I mean, the guy was on fire until he got hurt last towards the end of the season. I mean, Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph is gone, so they might take a step back a little bit. Iowa State, I mean, they'll get to a bowl game. I mean, some of these teams are just. The Big 12 doesn't have the depth some of these other power conferences have, Rick.
That's true. Yeah, the bottom kind of falls out. Now that's what we've been saying here. For a number of these conferences and a number of these divisions, as college football has gotten to be more and more top-heavy at these levels here, and we'll get to our thoughts for the playoffs, the bowl games subsequently. As far as other conferences go, my thoughts, Sun Belt. I am taking Arkansas State over Appalachian State. In the AAC, I'm going to say UCF to repeat. I'm going to take them over Navy. Conference USA, Florida Atlantic over UAB, the Mountain West, Boise State over San Diego State, and in the MAC, call me a homer if you want to, but this is the year, baby. Frank Solich gets it done. Ohio over Northern Illinois in the MAC championship game. Mark it down. That's how I see the other conferences going, Fran.
I like your picks, Rick. I mean, as far as down in the group of five, I think it's going to come down to either Boise State or Central Florida. One thing with Boise State is, in a couple weeks, they play at Oklahoma State. If they win that game, that can separate them from Central Florida. Central Florida, they play North Carolina. They should easily win that game in a couple weeks as well. But I really feel that it's either going to be Boise State or Central Florida in the group of five making the year six.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch that play out. When you talk about the New Year's Six bowl games, we'll get to this in a second here, because the top four teams, as I have them slotted right now, number one Alabama, number two Clemson, number three Oklahoma State, number four Ohio State. So Oklahoma, Ohio State rounding it out. And, again, a lot of chalk in there as far as it goes. Those four teams are going to be picked by an awful lot of people. Here's how I see the rest of these games going. The Peach Bowl, Penn State over Notre Dame. The Fiesta Bowl, Michigan over Boise State. I think they will be the qualifier from the other conferences. The Rose Bowl, they're going to go Pac-12, Big Ten. It's going to be Wisconsin over Washington, in my estimation. And in the Sugar Bowl, Auburn over Miami. That should be a pretty tasty game right there. So your thoughts on the New Year's Six games that do not include the bowl games here, the Peach Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, the Rose Bowl, and the Sugar Bowl. Thoughts on any of those?
It's going to be top heavy again. I mean, you'll probably have at least two or three Big Ten teams in those games. The thing that's interesting as far as the teams are concerned, Rick, is there a possibility that two teams in the Big Ten or SEC make the playoff? Because it happened last year, and the only way that can possibly happen is if the Pac-12 again has two losses, or for some reason Oklahoma loses two games.
Yeah, I think it's very possible, and again, it's a scenario where I think it's almost got to be maybe Ohio State and Wisconsin both being undefeated going into the Big Ten championship game. I think that's a possibility. I think Georgia getting in terms of you've got Alabama in there as well. So I think for Georgia to somehow, maybe again, if both of those teams are undefeated or the team with one loss is the team that wins the game, I think that's the scenario for either conference here because, again, for me, I've got Washington number 5 in the country. They're on the outside looking in, which is something that I'm sure the Pac-12 is getting sick of. The Big 12 has experienced it as well. The only thing that seems to keep the ACC from suffering the same fate is that they have Clemson, which is the ultimate equalizer. But, yeah, the ACC rarely, if ever, going to be a threat to get two teams in here. But the SEC and the Big Ten, absolutely, and I think even more so in the years to come as some more of these programs strengthen. If you see the programs, let's say, in terms of what happened at Georgia, if that happens at Florida and Tennessee with the guys that are in place there, you could definitely see more of a scenario in the years to come. Scott Frost at Nebraska, we've talked about that, again, there's going to be more of a scenario where the Big Ten is on the verge potentially in any given year of getting two teams in here. So I don't see it this year, Fran, but I think in the years to come, it's going to be a strong possibility year in and year out.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's going to be exciting to watch. I mean, I'm going to be glued to that Penn State Ohio State game. I think Penn State is going to win that game, and they're going to win the Big Ten championship and get to the playoff.
And that's the thing. And I believe in terms of my predictions for last year, I think I had Penn State winning that game and being in the playoff. This year I have Ohio State winning that game and being in the playoff. It's a thing where I agree with you. That game is going to, in all likelihood, determine it. When we talk about all the games in the Big Ten, I think the most pivotal of all is going to be Ohio State-Penn State because I think that's going to determine that spot. But the way I see it shaking out here, you've got the Orange Bowl. It's going to be Alabama-Ohio State. And the second matchup in the playoff era of Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, they had a lot of run-ins in the SEC previously. Ohio State getting over en route to their 2014 national championship when they beat Alabama in, I believe it was, the Sugar Bowl. Alabama gets revenge here in the Orange Bowl. In the Cotton Bowl, Clemson and Oklahoma, 2-3, that's the matchup. I see Clemson going over in that game yet again. We get a major game. Last year was a semifinal game where it was Clemson and Alabama. I believe that was in the Sugar Bowl. This year it'll be in the championship game in Palo Alto out at Levi Stadium. And it's interesting that there's been some thoughts that, again, if it's dominated by teams from the Southeast, if it's two teams from the Southeast, it may not do strongly enough in terms of local ticket sales. You wouldn't think a college football national championship game would be subject to these kind of market forces, but there's some concern that even if it's Clemson-Alabama, which is the epic rivalry of the 2010s, that game may not do as well at the gate or the secondary market. So we'll see. But I've got it number 2 Clemson over number 1 Alabama for the national championship. Dabo Sweeney gets revenge. Clemson's second national championship in 3 years is how I see it shaking out. Fran, how do you see the playoffs?
I agree with that. I think it's going to be Clemson-Alabama. I think this year it's going to be Clemson getting on top. I agree with you at that point. I still think Penn State will make the playoff. Washington could possibly end it, but I think that's going to be Oklahoma getting that spot.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you and I, if you're saying Oklahoma, we're agreeing on a couple of the teams here. We're really agreeing on everything except for the Big Ten representative, which I think kind of tends to show you the present landscape of college football, that the mega powers in the sport, so to speak here, with apologies to Hogan and Savage, but the mega powers of college football, they really have sort of separated themselves to another tier and everything, and for how this all shakes out. And again, with the Cotton Bowl, with the Orange Bowl being the games this year, we are now moving to a system where we're going to be getting away from, and in the years to come, the whole New Year's Eve debacle, to where the semifinal games, by and large, are going to be played on Saturdays with the lead-in for the following Monday, the national championship game there. I said all along I thought New Year's Eve was going to be a debacle, maybe the worst night of the year to try to have must-see viewing. And, again, interesting to see that college football adapted themselves to that. And I think that doubleheader is going to do boffo ratings by them having made that decision.
Well, one thing I have to mention is last year on our show, we were only podcast to talk about the Commander-in-Chief Trophy. And we had, and I predicted the Army the first time in 15 years would win it, and they did. And I expect Army to beat Navy again this year and win the Commander-in-Chief Trophy 2 years in a row.
So you're talking about that. Okay, well, that is that's fascinating. I really think that it's a good call on your part there, and the way that the program has really just sort of emerged and stepped up, and that Army win over Navy a couple of years ago was just so stirring as far as how long in coming it had been. And yeah, that is a very, very interesting part of the college football world, and of course the annual Army-Navy game. You look at any of the other things as well, you being a guy who of course follows college football at all levels, anything in sort of the nooks and crannies of college football that we've missed that you think is significant?
I mean, one thing that might be interesting is NCC plays James Madison the first week of season, and James Madison went to the FCS championship for the last 2 years. He won one 2 years ago, and they lost last year. That could be a tough game for NC State. That's not going to be easy opening victory for them.
That is very possible. You're right about that. And that is, these early games, there is a good chance to really be able to stub your toe, no question about that. By the way, to clarify on what was said previously, Saturday, December the 29th, those are going to be the college football playoff games here this year. So foregoing doing it on Monday, December 31st. So you're looking at the Capital One Orange Bowl at 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock, depending. I'm not really sure why they have it there, unless they're figuring they're going to wait until whatever the better primetime game is. And the Cotton Bowl will be at either 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock as far as how that one shakes out. But as far as some of the top games for the year, and then we talked about this, that we've got the list of the top 50 here. I've got, when you're looking at a program that has a very, very interesting year, and I wouldn't say it's a must-win situation for Gus Malzahn. He certainly bought himself some time from last year. But the one thing we didn't really talk much about that gets me is I have Auburn in the three most fascinating games of the year going into the season. Now, obviously, the one that is number two on my list, Auburn versus Washington, if they dump that one, then retroactively, these other games are going to be less interesting. But the Iron Bowl, to me, the rematch of last year and Alabama getting shocked as they were in Week 13, I have that as the number one game of the year. Auburn-Washington 2 and Auburn-Georgia, I have that as the number three game of the year. So particularly, again, these games will only retain their full appeal if Auburn gets past Washington and then has either no losses or only one loss going into the other two games here. But very rarely does a program like Auburn have a run of games like that to where arguably they're in the three best and most anticipated games of the year going in.
I mean, if Auburn beats Washington, that's going to be a major plus to them. If Washington loses that game and makes some reason lose another game, they'll definitely be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, they will. As far as the national championship goes, and as far as them being one of two teams coming out of the SEC, you have to avoid losses like that. Everybody says, oh, well, losses in September aren't quite as consequential. But, again, when you have a season like Auburn's where, let's face it, they're set up to fail. I mean, it is what it is. You have the in-conference schedule. You have the big non-conference game with Washington. You have to basically try to just keep surviving one potential catastrophe after another, one potential booby trap. And again, you fall into the first booby trap week one, and there's no margin for error the rest of the way. You probably have to win the conference. And if you do that as a one-loss team, you'll survive and you'll make the playoff. But you do not want to, on Labor Day weekend, erase all of your margin for error. But again, a boffo preview to the 2018 college football season as I knew it would be. Fran Stuckberry, again, you are a gentleman who just, again, follows, researches, devours college football, football really at all levels. So probably the next time you'll be on is when we're talking about plans for the XFL, when that gets a little bit more solid and a little bit more formed as far as where they're going and other professional football that is going to be sort of competing with it at that level. So your ongoing coverage for our Sports Central, of course, and other fine outlets that you are working for, it is always a pleasure to have you in the FDH Lounge, Fran. I thank you so much for what you brought to the segment.
Thanks, Rick. I'm always happy to be on the show. As I say about your podcast doesn't set the bar. It is the bar.
Thank you, Seamus. I appreciate that. And, yeah, that is it is always great to have you on. Great to talk college football. These are absolutely priceless conversations to have with you. Thank you for being on, Fran. Thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode number 1017.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.